Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Now, we always like to have something a little bit different later on in the night, and my guest tonight is no different to that, is a content director, or creator, director, I was going to say, an entrepreneur who is dedicated to helping people connect with their knowledge and beauty within. Taylor Perkins, a.k.a. Mr. Cult Daddy, has been creating content online to help with personal growth and aims to ignite a collective awakening. And despite his name, by the way, he doesn't actually like cults at all, and I'm kind of glad. I'm not into cults really myself. And tonight is going to be, I suppose, a look ahead to 2025 and talk about the blueprint to becoming a superhuman. I wouldn't mind doing a bit of that myself. Taylor, hi, how are you?
Hey, how's it going? Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
Yeah, superhuman sounds good. By the way, I already watched the trailer to the new Superman movie, by the way, earlier on tonight. So I'd like to see a better version of myself for 2025. But how do you make a better version of yourself?
You know, it really comes down to, and this is what I try to do with my content. It's really interesting. As you look at technology, you can see how computers, you know, Google's been in the news a lot lately about their quantum computers. You can see how this technology is truly patterned after the human body, the human intellect, the brain, you know, all these different things. And when you can correlate that information and see how a computer works and apply it into your own life, it's really interesting because you kind of unlock some efficiencies or different things that you can do to kind of optimize your computer and get the most out of it.
Yeah, I love this whole, by the way, I'm a bit obsessed with this whole quantum theory, you know, this quantum computers, this whole idea of being on and off at the same time. I'm obsessed with it. So what you're saying in life, it doesn't have to be binary. It doesn't have to be a single choice of, you know, do it one way or do it the other. Do it both. You know, do you understand what I'm saying? Am I on the wrong track here when it comes to quantum technology?
Yeah. No, you're 100% correct. I think a lot of times as humans, we approach things, right? The word would be binary, where it's like yes or no. And we kind of look at these decisions one by one. The analogy I always give people is, you know, that would be like if you have a wardrobe with 10 shirts, 10 pants, 10 different pairs of shoes. In a binary system, you would try each one of those on one by one by one, and go through, you know, 1,000 different options to figure out what you want to do. A quantum computer can process all of the different combinations all at once and figure out, okay, this is the combination that you want to do in that moment. And that's where, you know, the power is. And with the human mind, you're not going to be able to, you know, process 10,000 different combinations of clothing.
And my wife can.
But yeah, that's right. That's right. It would save us a lot of time. Yeah. It would save us a lot of time if our wives could do it, for sure. But what you can do is you can realize that there's a lot of different situations in your life where you look at things as binary, and more importantly, your internal programming, how it controls the options that are available to you. So like, to give you an example, today I posted a video about people who deal with loneliness, right?
Okay.
And that loneliness will impact the decisions that they make in their life, right? Because a big factor in their decision making is they want to be around people. They don't want to feel lonely. And so for anybody who can look at themselves like a computer, sit down with the fact, you know, a lot of people will call it the shadow, sit down with the fact that you don't want to be lonely and ask yourself the questions, why am I afraid of loneliness? You know, where did this programming come from? What does it stem from? And then from there, you can keep going deeper and deeper saying, okay, you know, so let's say the loneliness stems from me as a child where my parents would leave and I was afraid. Did I need to be afraid of anything?
Yeah.
Did that mean anything about me? Right. And as you work through those issues, you can debug your programming. You can change it to a more empowering programming, going from loneliness to being alone, which
and enjoying your own company.
Exactly. Yeah, it's an empowering thing where it's like, oh, I have everything I need within me. I am perfectly comfortable being in my own space by myself and enjoying my own company.
I only read research the other day, by the way, sorry for interrupting, but I read research the other day that said that the less people you have in your life, i.e. you and your partner, obviously being in love, but the less people that you surround yourself with, the happier you'll be in life. Because the less interference you will have in your life. So if you can do things, you know, and keep people at a distance. And I tend to do that anyway. You know, I have a lot of acquaintances, but very few friends. Keep people at a distance.
You know, that makes a lot of sense, because I think what a lot of people do is they generally will present themselves in a manner that they believe whatever the party is, you know, opposite of them, what they want to see, right? Masking. Mm. And masking takes a lot of energy, and it does not bring a lot of happiness, because you're not being your full authentic self. You're playing a character for someone else, right?
It's like a simulation.
And so that becomes exhausting. And so it would make sense that you're happier if you can keep people at a distance. I would actually interject that another solution would be kind of like what I was saying with that shadow work and debugging, is working to, instead of coming from an area that is fear-based thinking, approaching situations in a self-fulfilling, self, you know, loving, like, it's all good, I have everything I need. And if when you have that and that courage, you can be your authentic self and understand that there's going to be some people that like you and some people that don't. And it's okay. It's all good.
Yeah, it's because when you think about yourself, it, right? When you think about it, those socialites, these people who are socialites, you know, who are, you know, surround themselves constantly with people all the time, or constantly going to events, blah, blah, they're some of the most unhappiest people I've ever met. Anyway, you seem to cover an awful lot on your social media. I've seen stuff about simulated reality and past life regression. I mean, where did you get the interest for all of these, you know, these kinds of things? Or where did it start?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I grew up in a beautiful, very conservative religion. I don't know if you've heard of it, but I grew up Mormon.
Okay, yeah, we've heard of Mormons, experience Irish people have with Mormons, they knock at our door and try to hand us prayer books.
Exactly. Right? The church sends you out. So I went and did that when I turned 19. They sent me to Ukraine. My little brother went to Taiwan.
They're always well-dressed, by the way, can I point out? They always have nice suits on them. They used to call to our door when I was a kid. There's always two of them, and they're always really good-looking guys. And they'd hand you a little prayer book and the suit. Yeah.
That's nice that you say that, because I was always embarrassed to be wearing a suit and tie when everyone else normal clothing. But it was a very unique upbringing with a very specific perspective. And what I found was, as I went into adulthood and started exploring different perspectives, different teachings, just philosophies on life, I was able, I would say, to get a little bit more of the picture of how I believed reality operates. Mm-hmm. And it honestly just became this passion and almost this addiction of sorts, where there was just this thirst and hunger for knowledge from every perspective that I hadn't previously, you know, encountered, whether it's kind of like Eastern perspectives, right? Middle Eastern perspectives, you know, just different things that I wouldn't have. And what's fascinating is the more that you take in their perspectives, I look at it this way. You can have 10 different computers and give them all the same data, and the information they will spit out will be different according to their programming. Mm. Even though that data is the same, the output is different just because the programming dictates, you know, what do with the data.
Yeah.
And so for me, if you can aggregate and collect as much data as you possibly can of outputs from different cultures, different peoples, different perspectives, and if you can understand what is their programming, you can reverse engineer and get to this common point where the data is the same. And that's something that I have found as I've done my explorations and kind of reverse engineer these perspectives, is you kind of come to very similar inputs which to me is a signal that, okay, this might actually be some truth amongst, you know, a sea of opinion.
What was it? What was it like, by the way, just to take you back a little bit to the being a Mormon? By the way, are you still a follower of the religion? Are you still a believer in the religion there?
No, I have left the religion. I think it's a really good church for a lot of people. But I would say my path is a little bit more of a personal quest rather than a structured, organized system.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of becoming more like computers nowadays, because with AI and ChatGPT and you know, computers kind of having nearly a mind of their own now, we're getting more like computers, really, aren't we?
Absolutely. And I actually believe you can look at these systems almost like this cosmic mirror, if you will, right? Where you can look at AI, and what everybody talks about with AI is, you know, what happens when it becomes super conscious, right? When it can program itself and we lose control. And, you know, I think it's really interesting, because I would make a similar argument to what happens when people become conscious to all their programming and realize that they can program themselves instead of these systems or, you know, all these things that they've been subjected to. You can look at, you know, the situation that's going on. Have you been following like the drones and the orbs and all of that stuff that's been all over social media?
It's crazy. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And you can look at it though as a mirror, and you can see, okay, let's imagine that these orbs, let's say they're extraterrestrial, right? And let's say that some of these drones are man-made. And you can see playing out in real time how the human mind attacks situations that we don't understand, where it's about control. It's about, you know, coming in with force or whatever it may be. And so I think the advancement of technology and all of these things that play out, it, for anybody who's paying attention, you can actually look at it as a mirror and get incredible insights into our own computer, like I was saying.
Are we better people now that we have all this technology, or are we worse because we rely so much on the technology? Do you understand what I'm saying? Do we rely too much on this technology to make us better people? In other words, we're actually not better people at all because the technology is doing most of it for us. Because nowadays, people write emails using ChatGPT. You know, write me an email to my solicitor telling him I hate him. You know what I mean? Whatever. And it writes this fancy schmancy email that you're not capable of. But everybody thinks you're real intelligent. Doesn't that email look great? So are we better people because of it, or are we worse?
You know, I think it's really hard to split it into black and white. I think it's a similar thing with the internet, where I would almost say there's probably an equilibrium to the amount of good that happens online and the amount of bad. Yeah. And I think it's the same thing with AI, where, you know, people will use it to make themselves more efficient so that they can have more time to spend on the things that they love. You know, that stuff.
We're angrier people.
There's also people.
We're very angry nowadays. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm very angry because that's my job, to be angry. But we're very angry nowadays. Between politics, social media, you know, I mean, if you're following in American elections, of course, that's the most entertaining thing in the world. But generally speaking, if, you know, if you're looking online, be it Twitter or X, as it's called nowadays, TikTok, I mean, everything makes you happy, sad, angry. You know, we're all very emotional people nowadays, whereas before, life was just so much simpler.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is overstimulation. I do think there's actually an incentive for the powers that be to keep people angry, because when you're fearful or when you're angry, it activates your amygdala, which completely bypasses your frontal lobe, which is your logic center, logical reasoning, right? And so that's why politics focuses so much on fear-based, you know, fear-mongering or making you angry, is because what it does is it jumps the kind of fight or flight system that hijacks your brain, and it focuses on action.
Look at the American election, since the American people. I mean, obviously the liberals of society, after Donald Trump was elected, were shaving their heads, you know what I mean, and crying tears. Yeah. I mean, it's only 4 years. It's not going to be the worst thing in the world. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. It depends whether you're a fan of Trump or not. But the point is, look what it's doing to people. It's crazy.
Exactly. And I think the people that run elections, that you know, run these campaigns. They understand human psychology. And so they use it for their benefit because, yeah, if you've got someone in fear-based thinking or, you know, in anger-based thinking, they're more likely to act. But the issue is the repercussions and the waves that it's making in society, like you were saying. Like, there's a lot of people who are extremely fearful right now, which I would say there's not a lot of reason to be that afraid. Like, just when you look at history and the data, like,
yeah,
there's only so much that can happen.
Yeah, true.
But the thing is, when they consumed so much fear-based, you know, fear-mongering, like all this propaganda, and then the thing happens that they were afraid of, the natural byproduct is extreme fear. But all of it was created. None of it is actually, you know, real. And so I think that's where...
Is there a man... Okay, society, so here's the ultimate question then, Taylor. Is there a man behind the curtain?
I think the scarier thing is that the people behind the curtain... I think there could be organizations, you know, whatever, that are behind the curtain. I think the scarier thing is those behind the curtain are the only ones that know how little control they have. And so it's almost easier for us, right, to be like, oh, there's someone pulling the strings that's doing all this. But I also think, you know, we just live in a massive, chaotic world. But I do think the benefit of technology, social media, these different things in the modern world is the more connected we become, the better we become, hopefully, at communicating, which should solve a lot of these problems, and we can stop fighting one another and maybe, I don't know, save the planet that we are currently destroying.
We've now reduced the number of people in the world who are kind of running the world or I suppose, dictating how we should feel. I mean, there was a time there were thousands of people in the world who were leaders or who were important people or whatever.
Yep.
Now we're down to like 10. You know what I mean? I mean, you've got, you know, Elon Musk and Trump and Mark Zuckerberg and these kind of people. So there's like 10 people in the world who are essentially controlling the anger, controlling the sadness, controlling the happiness and the opinions of the world. I mean, so it's kind of hard then to be yourself, isn't it?
I think so. But I also think, you know, a lot of this is kind of like a Wizard of Oz situation, right? Where you have the wizard that's behind the curtain and the power is all smoke and mirrors. And, you know, really what the power is people buying into the illusion. Because when you think about it, you know, you have these individuals who have massive amounts of money behind them and massive amounts of influence, but it still is the general population that essentially gives them that power, right?
Yeah.
If people were against Mark Zuckerberg and the collective came together and said, you know what, we don't like him anymore, we're all getting off Instagram and Facebook and we're going to move over to another platform, that would have some pretty massive change, right? And so I do think that they have power, but I think that power is partially because the collective believes that they have power. And so if we can kind of just wake up to how much power we have because the numbers are with us, I think pretty quickly the illusion would change.
Yeah, and you know, you spoke about earlier on being a Mormon. I mean, realistically, all of these things, these social media, be it TikTok or WhatsApp or Instagram, they're all technically religions. They're all cults. They're all something that we all, you know, follow and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah. But look, it's an intriguing conversation. I would have loved to have more time to talk to you. It's a really intriguing conversation. And if people want to follow you, what's the best place? I know you're called Mr. Cult Daddy. Not the
That's
other
right.
word. Yeah, McCult with an L, by the way, can I point out? Mr. Cult. Cult Daddy, in case I mispronounced it. Where they catch you? On Instagram, TikTok?
Yeah.
Where's the best places to get you?
Primarily Instagram and TikTok. And like you said, you know, these social media platforms are cults. And that's why I named myself Mr. Cult Daddy, to wake people up to the fact that we're all a part of a cult.
Yeah, we
Everyone
are.
Everyone has their little things. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, look,
exactly.
Mr. Cult Daddy, if you want to follow him, see some of the videos. Some of the videos are great, by the way. Very inspiring as well, by the way. But listen, thank you very much indeed, Taylor Perkins. Appreciate you joining us tonight. And it's been an interesting conversation. We'll chat again sometime when we have a bit more time. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
There you go. From Arizona, Taylor Perkins, a.k.a. Mr. Cult Daddy. That's M-R, by the way, not M-I-S-T-R. M-R, if you want to find him online, Mr. Cult Daddy. And really interesting stuff, by the way. kind of gets you, because I go down a rabbit hole with that kind of stuff, can't you, really? You know, he's right. It's all cults. Instagram is a cult. Facebook is a cult. Twitter is a cult, or X as it's known, is a cult. These are all cults. Politics is a cult. You can go down that rabbit hole constantly all the time. And I am right. I mean, years ago, there was thousands of people, important people in the world, making all the decisions and deciding what we should and shouldn't do. Nowadays, we're kind of limited down to about 10 people who make decisions in the world, who tell us how we all should feel about things, who let us know how we should all feel about things. Anyway, thank you to everybody getting involved in the show tonight. I should be back again with you tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. Until then, have a great day. Enda Murphy's on the way with some lovely love songs.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.